Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levypayers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hi, I'm James Haig, one of AHDB's Dairy Knowledge Exchange Managers, and welcome to this episode about Yoni's disease. Over the next 40 or so minutes, I'll be reminding you of the importance of detection and control of the chronic contagious bacterial infection that affects the intestinal tract of cattle and other ruminants. Kicking off the discussion, I spoke to Pete Orpin, retired practicing vet, director of My Healthy Herd and chair of the technical group for the National Action Group on Yonis, along with Sarah Tomlinson, a practicing farm vet for over 20 years, who has recently joined AHDB as their lead veterinary science expert. Here's Pete to explain what Yonis disease is.
Yonis disease is a bacterial disease of cows, and it's an interesting one because the bacteria is resistant to any sort of treatments. We can't treat it. And that's the challenge. And it's unusual because the normal route of infection is that baby calf consumes infected feces from an infected cow. And then there's an incubation period of typically 2 to 5 years before the disease develops in the adult cow. Now, the symptoms we see in the adult cow, it initially starts off with a reduction in milk production. The cow starts to look slightly plain. It's not performing quite as well as she should. She might then start suffering from other diseases as well, mastitis and higher cell counts, and has other comorbidities at the same time. And then ultimately she starts to develop a persistent scour, and it's got a characteristic smell. And if nothing is done, eventually the animal gets to a point of emaciation and death. What we find, though, in most modern, well-run dairy herds is that most farmers quite often will remove those animals from the herd before the symptoms fully develop. And so many farms have the disease but may not be aware it's present on their farm.
You mentioned that it's a cow-to-calf infection, but when is the biggest risk period for animals becoming infected?
Yeah, the typical risk period is probably in the first 24 hours of the calf's life, because it's in the maternity yard. If the mother is infected, or indeed another cow is in a communal maternity yard is infected, it can contaminate the environment, and that's when the actual calf can take the infection in. In most dairy farms, the calves are then separated from the adult cows, and as long as there's not cross-contamination of cow feces back into the calf unit, then quite often they're reasonably safe for that period when they're housed. There is another risk period that can occur within the herd is when the calves go out to grass, and obviously what you've done with adult cow slurry and whether that's been applied on the pasture, that's relevant. But as the animal gets older and older and older, it does get more difficult to actually infect that animal. So infection is much more likely to occur. And many people believe that 80% of the infection occurs in the first month of life. And I would say in many cases, probably the first few days of life.
In terms of health and welfare, what are the impacts? And have we got any figures on the financial impacts as well?
Yeah, I think it's a real challenge there, because what actually happens, the calf picks up the infection, and then what will happen is it seems to control it. It's got good, strong immunity when it's young, and then eventually it starts to lose control. And when it starts to lose control, that's when it starts to shed bacteria in the feces and spread infection to the next generation. And we also then get the symptoms developing. So it's a progressive sort of change, and that depends on the immunity of the animal. Now, in terms of the economics are that what Yonis disease does, it causes premature culling of animals. It also has this association with other diseases. So, you know, most farmers, when they do control the disease and put an effective control plan in place, when we quizzed, 400 farmers, we quizzed them on what they thought were the most important benefits, and they found that over 80% identified the herd was healthier, and a further 62% saw that reduction in emergency culling. So instead of having a situation where an animal developed disease at a later stage and they weren't ready for it and they had to cull it in the onset of lactation, they could have a planned removal at a much lower cost. I think the other benefits that we see with effective control is that we get healthier calves, and there are other non-economic benefits like less worry, less stress. In terms of when it goes really wrong, though, I've experienced it in herds where unwittingly somebody has bought in animals and the infection has spread quite widely within the herd before they notice. Then you can end up with a fairly disastrous situation. Because of this incubation period, you can have a situation where the infection levels build and build and build, and it gets worse before it gets better. It's one of the few diseases, when I've done lots of talks around the country on a variety of different diseases in cattle, and it's one of the few diseases where I've had farmers in tears describing their experiences if they have very serious Yone's disease infections. It is a very distressing disease if it really develops in a herd. And at that point, it's typically costing between 2 and 4 pence per litre. Now, at that level, you know, you're in a situation where it may not be economically viable to carry on farming, or you start to make significant losses.
And Sarah, what's been your experience in terms of the impact that Yone's has on the herd?
I think for a lot of farmers, it just feels like, because of exactly what Pete's described, it's very hard to pinpoint what the issue is on farm. For some things like calf pneumonia, there's a very specific problem. There's a very specific sort of plan you can put in place. So I think for farmers and vets, talking and saying, right, we've just got to start to look at managing Yone's and working out what the benefits are going to be over time. And I think the good thing with Yone's is there are so many different things from a biosecurity point of view and a biocontainment, if you like, point of view that you can manage on farm and that you can control. You can start to identify some of these animals if you are screening and testing for them, and then you can manage their calving differently, managing the calves differently, managing your colostrum. And I think, yeah, that gives farmers some control back.
Pete, what's probably the best way to tell if an animal is infected with Yone's disease? How do we sort of make a diagnosis?
In terms of an animal, if you have an animal in your herd that is scouring terribly and losing weight, then I'd strongly advise you to get a vet to test that animal to check that it's not got Yone's disease. So if you've got a clinical case, then it's important that you actually investigate that. There are other causes of scour, but the vet would actually do an examination and test for that. If you don't have that syndrome, then what we would normally suggest is to start off with is a 30 cow screen, and that's a targeted screen. You're not just doing 30 random cows. You're looking at 30 cows, typically between the ages of 3 and 5. And you're looking for cows with high cell count, cows with poor yields, any cows that are plainer looking, ones that you're worried about, any cows with health issues. The reason why we do that is that if we test those animals that are at higher risk of getting the disease, we end up with a more accurate screen, more accurate sort of testing screen. If you don't want to go to the bother of looking at 30 cows like that, well, you could look at 60 cows and just do a random test. But you've got to start looking at a minimum of 60 cows if you're just going to do a random test. In some farms, they may be sufficiently concerned. The vet may say to them, well, your best test is to test all the animals in the herd. And so, you know, there's a greater degree of reliability the more animals you test. The test we typically would use is the milk test, and that's widely used in this country and in other countries. And that's a reliable test, a reasonably reliable test, if it's used sensibly.
And I think the key thing to remember is these animals are infected in that first week, 6 months of life. It's understanding that the test finds false negatives, if you like. Just because the test is clear doesn't necessarily mean that animal isn't infected. The test hasn't just picked it up, which is why selecting those potentially higher risk cows, we've got a better chance of identifying disease or infection on the farm. And just because an animal tests clear doesn't mean that it isn't infected and it won't test positive further down the line. So that's where looking at family relationships, mothers, daughters in the herd becomes part of that, identifying those higher risk animals, but also how we manage those higher risk animals.
I think it's a really important point, Sarah, because if an animal's infected at day zero, he won't show up in the milk test, certainly won't for the first 2 years. You're not even milking then. But even when in the early stages, when it's controlling the infection well, it won't register on the milk test. And it's only when it starts to lose control and starts to shed slightly that you'll actually get the test showing positivity. And that's typically at that sort of 2, 3, 4 years of age. And so it's very, very important when you're buying animals in, for instance, that, you know, just buying an animal in that tests negative doesn't mean it's not infected. You can buy infection in by, you know, going to a herd and just buying animals that are testing negative. It could be that they're still incubating the disease.
That's Pete Orpin from the National Action Group on Yonis. You'll hear more from him and AHDB's lead veterinary science expert, Sarah Tomlinson, in a moment on the Food and Farming Podcast. But I just wanted to pause the conversation to get a farmer's perspective on dealing with yonis. I recently went to Curtis Hume Farm to visit farmer Caroline Williams, who told me how their farm had been affected.
So we've had a few positive cows for a number of years. Started a number of years ago where we'd find them clinically positive cows. And then we've tested, sort of started with a cohort of 30. And then from there we've started at doing the whole herd more frequently. Definitely gets you down seeing poorly cows and the effect it has on the herd. So starting the testing's really been positive for us.
Yeah, what was that light bulb moment? When did you decide to act to do something about it?
I think it's just naturally happened. The testing was there from the vets in the background, and then encouragement to be signed up to Yonis programs through our milk contract and the red tractor as well has definitely sort of encouraged us to go further. And then the more we've done, the more we've found, the more we've gained from it.
And what measures have you put in place, thinking more to manage the high-risk cows differently to contain infection?
We tag any cow that's got a positive reading against it with an orange, nice bright orange J tag, nice and clear and visible, that can be seen. We do still calve everything in one pen, but those cows will not stay in that pen. And we do our best to try to get the Yonis cows to calve in the dry cow pen, and then they're not into the actual calving pen itself. The J tags are also, say, nice and visual for serving. So if we do keep any cows that are known Yonis positive, they'll be served to beef. Or if something else happens to that cow, it's maybe another reason on the call list. A big part has been working out all the offspring off Yonis positive animals. So we've tagged those as high risk animals, served to beef, treat as a Yonis cow even though she isn't. But hopefully that will just stop the breeding of Yonis through the herd.
And like you say, the orange tags are completely visible. It's easy to identify when you stood in the shed. When someone's in the office though, making those management decisions, what signs have you got there for people in the office?
So we've got a whole herd list colour-coded, yeah, with the Yonis cows, so known positive. They're then yellow on a list if they're offsprings of a Yonis cow, or orange if they're a medium positive. So it just all helps in those decision-making processes for culling or breeding and so on.
And I think I've heard you say, I've especially heard other people say, that when dealing with Yonis, it gets worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
What were the challenges at the start?
We had enough positive cows to tackle it, and then working out all the offspring, we kind of ended up with a third of the herd tagged, or it felt like it was going to be. So just managing that risk. The known positives are definitely sort of going on the breeding list and the call list. Those offsprings, it's all about risk to the future of the herd as well as future of Yonis within the herd. So managing risk and managing expectation properly as well.
And of all the things that you put in place, what do you think for your farm has been the most successful?
Just breeding them to beef, so not breeding.
Yeah, not breeding the replacements.
Replacements. So as I was saying about tagging a cow, if she's an offspring, we won't tag a calf from birth, but we will sort of identify that calf as a potential risk and only serve that calf, that heifer, to beef as well. So yeah, been a big part, has been the breeding. We're probably still managing the calving area, and actually
and you've got a fantastic team here on the farm, but in terms of getting buy-in into for the management of Yonis, has that been a struggle? What have you had to do to sort of explain to the team?
I think they understand we don't want to see the clinical cases and the impact it has on the herd. I think they think I'm a little bit mad with how far I've gone, but we can see the positive out of it now, and we're getting very few heifers born to be known yoni as positive cows or even offspring cows. So it just makes life a lot easier then to manage those calves going forwards.
And in terms of positive effects, what have been the easy wins? What's had the biggest impact controlling yonis? Have you seen improved calf health or reduced levels of infectious disease or even, you know, yeah, for yourself and Dave, better mental well-being?
Yeah, I think general health. If you've got a lame cow, you looked and probably got a J in its ear. If you've got a mastitis cow, it's probably got a J in its ear. So health has definitely had a big impact. And, yeah, management in the calving pen and calf health has definitely improved as well. So snatching calves as quickly as we can really does improve calf health, keeping the calving area as clean as possible, and getting clean colostrum into the cows and calves and knowing how much they're getting, it all really impacts on positively on calf health.
That's Caroline Williams with a first-hand account of how she's dealt with yonis disease on this episode of AHDB's Food and Farming Podcast. I'm James Haig. Let's rejoin my conversation with Pete Orpin from the National Action Group on Yonis and Sarah Tomlinson, AHDB's lead veterinary science expert, which will recap some of the points made by Caroline. I asked Pete, when it comes to testing, what happens when the sample gets taken from the farm?
The most important thing is to obviously make sure you correctly identify the animal and note that actually on the milk testing tube. So if you're doing it individually and you're personally taking the test, it's very important that you have you clearly written the cow's identity on it. If the milk recorder is doing it, then obviously they will do the same. It's then sent to the lab, and the lab will process that through a machine. And these machines are doing, you know, literally thousands of these tests every day now. What it will be measuring the antibody level, and that's the level of sort of antibody in the milk. And there's a cut point there. They'll typically say once it's above you know, a certain level, it will be classified as an inconclusive animal, or it will be classified as a positive animal. And so you do need interpretation of those results. So when you get the 30 cow screen back, you'll get some that may test negative, some may test inconclusive, some may test positive. And it's then down to the vet to interpret those results carefully and provide some advice and guidance to you in terms of what you should do next.
Yeah, and that is really important, because you know what a colleague, a friend, a farmer is doing on another farm with the same level of test results for individual cows might be slightly different to how you manage it, depending on, you know, the number of inconclusives you got, the number of positives you got, might slightly change the way you manage it. If you only have one or two, you might decide to cull those straight off the farm. If you've got 30%, then you have to start to look at how you manage those differently.
And what are your thoughts about how frequently we should be testing?
Let's go back to basics. The 30 cow screen, or the 60 cow random screen, or the whole herd screen you do at the beginning, the purpose of that is to establish whether you've got disease in the herd or not. That's what you're trying to do. Then you will may be advised by your vet to actually move on to a more regular testing program so that you can actually control the disease. And you're then testing more frequently, maybe twice a year, maybe four times a year, depending on what the vet advises. So you can identify infected animals early. And if you identify infected animals early, you can clearly identify them and make sure they don't go into those areas like the maternity yard, the calving yard, and contaminate your replacement calves. So you're trying to break the cycle, in effect. So, you know, that's what we start to do then. You know, you start to use testing as a way of just aiding the management of the control of the disease. And looking at, we've got six control strategies for yonis disease, but by far the majority, probably it's over 70% now of farmers that are using an effective control strategy would be using improved farm management, some hygiene combined with testing. And that's what they would be doing as the most economic way of doing it.
And so what do you think we should be doing if we've got an animal that tests positive for yonis disease?
It really depends on how many, I suppose. You know, if it is just one and you can afford to cull her, then she leaves. But it's not just then, that's the end of it. How many daughters has she got in the herd? How, and do you put those into your next sort of screening session, or do you decide there and then that they don't go into the maternity areas, they are served to a terminal sire, so you're then not perpetuating the problem? And I think that is, a lot of farmers identify the high-risk cows and cull them, but don't do the other stuff. And that's why they say, well, I'm not getting on top of yonis because I keep getting these red cows, I keep culling them. But because we're not then looking at how we manage their daughters and potentially other calves that were in their cohorts, we're not breaking that cycle.
Once you're in the stage where you're testing more regularly, once an animal tests positive, you identify it as a high-risk animal. You put a red tag in its ear. You know, and that clearly shows to everybody you should think very carefully before you actually move that animal where you move it at the time of calving. And also in terms of your breeding decisions, it alters your thinking as to whether you want to breed the, try and breed a replacement from an infected animal. Probably not a good idea. You'd probably breed to terminal sire or not breed at all. So, you know, that first test positive is a really important point. If you then repeat test, the beauty of the repeat test is you can see by looking at the numbers as to whether that animal is coping with the disease. Sometimes they become intermittent, they go up and down, these infected cows have good and bad days, or some completely lose control of the disease and they rapidly start to deteriorate over the test. So the test might start off at 30, then it goes to 60, then it goes up to 90 over a 6-month period. And those animals obviously would need to be classified as absolute priorities for culling.
And I think those practical tips like sticking a red tag in its ear, it's visual, you can see it. Even putting notes onto passports and management software so that when you are selecting which straw of semen you're going to put on that cow, you know, it's there and you say, oh, right, no, I'm not going to put that sex semen on it. I am going to put, you know, a Belgian blue, an Angus or something else. So it's easy to control it then. It's not you've got to the point at the back of the cow and you see the red tag and go, oh, I'm not meant to be putting the sex semen in, when you're about to be putting the sex semen in. So it just makes things easy for everybody in the team to be able to identify these animals and stop that cycling.
We've spoken about blood testing in terms of identifying yonis, but what does fecal sampling tell us?
It's a slightly different test. What it does is it tests for the organism in the dung. And the challenge you have is that they test between the antibody test and the feces test don't entirely match. So if you have an animal that is testing positive repeatedly by milk or blood over several months and it's getting worse, and you test that animal by feces, you will find that it's more than likely going to test positive on both the blood, milk and feces. However, if you do a feces test at the very early stages of the disease, you could have a situation where it's not identified by the feces, but it could be positive on the blood or the milk. So what the general advice is that find a test that works for you and stick with it. You know, that's the most important thing. Most people on economic grounds, probably on ease grounds, opt for a milk test because if they are milk recording, it's much easier for them to do it that way. If you are using blood tests, then obviously that's, you know, your choice. But again, stick with that regime. But if you start hopping between tests, you will get differences and you can end up shaking your own confidence about the veracity of the test or how useful the test is. So what we generally advise is find a test and stick with it and do enough of it. And then you can actually get a good feel for what's happening in your herd.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we're really bad within probably the veterinary profession, because I know we talk about tests being the gold standard. And I know the fecal screen is talked about as being gold standard. What we mean is that it isn't the best test. It means it's unrefutable. You know, if you grow MAP on a fecal test, that's pretty conclusive that that cow is shedding that infection. However, if you get a negative result, we can't draw the conclusion that that definitely isn't infected. And I think that's where some of the language we use and some of the communication is really important, because it's remembering that cows don't shed until they're probably quite end stage disease. When they do start to shed, it's intermittent. So that might be the one day you take that fecal sample that she isn't shedding. So I think understanding why we use certain tests in certain situations is really important. And like Pete said, it's using a test that you understand what the results mean, and more importantly, how you can change what you do on your farm on the basis of those test results?
Farmers that I've spoken to that have started Yoni's control in the herds have said that it's got a lot worse before anything got better. Just, you know, from both of you, what would be your reflections on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, often when you start, because of the fact that you may have a bow wave of infection going through a herd, you can have a situation where you start and it does get worse before it gets better. But the good news is that the sooner you start, the more effective the control plan will be. So don't wait until you've got half your herd infected before you start the control program. You know, if you have a situation where you identify a low level of infection, then that's the best time to actually start controlling it, because you're starting it at the best time, you know. And unlike many other diseases, it has the potential to keep on tracking upwards, getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, it's not, there's never a good reason for delaying the control of Yoni's disease, in my view.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, you've got to start somewhere, and let's bite the bullet, start looking, start doing some screening testing. And you will, if you look for disease, then most likely you'll find it. But actually, every animal you identify is one that you can control. And I think the farmers that go, oh, I haven't got Yoni's, they're just not looking for it. And that's more dangerous than, yeah, like you said, it gets worse before it gets better. But you have to start somewhere. And absolutely, you will see some light at the end of the tunnel.
There's obviously a tangible cost for paying for testing, but also there's a tangible benefit. If you can identify infection early, these animals can be planned removals at a time that suits you without any welfare impact on the cow. It's just something you introduce, a bit like finding a high cell count cow and you choose to remove that cow from your herd. It's so much better to be on the front foot. And many farmers I've spoken to, they said, well, in essence, the testing comes for free, because the money I save on all those culling decisions and the money I save in actually ultimately getting much better control of the disease, you know, it's a bit of a no-brainer, really.
And I think that's really important, because sometimes when we talk about a specific disease, we kind of focus on that. But this has got to be part of a whole management plan on a farm. You know, farmers aren't just dealing with Yoni's. They're dealing with TB. They've got lameness. They've got mastitis. You know, you've got all these different decisions that farmers have got to make. And it's just making sure Yoni's is part of that decision making process when you are choosing culls, when you're choosing what genetics and genomics you're looking at. You know, this all becomes part of one management structure.
In terms of buying animals into the herd, AHDB have got a cattle purchasing checklist, which is available to levy payers to order. But just, you know, general comments now, what would be the questions that you would want people to ask when they're thinking about buying animals in?
Well, I think it's obviously, if you know you have Yoni's disease, it is illegal to actually lie to the person that's buying from you. You can, you know, it's a very good way of ending up in court. So everybody has to be honest here. And I think the questions you would ask if you're buying from a herd is that, have you had any diagnosis of Yoni's disease on your herd? Do you regularly test for disease or not? And if so, can I see your reports? You know, most herds have Yoni's disease to some degree, but what you don't want to do is to be buying from a herd which has no testing and could be an absolutely ticking time bomb herd, or a herd where it's got a very high level of infection, which is worse than yours. So you're looking to identify herds to buy from which you've got a lower level of infection than yours. And, you know, any of those herds that are testing quarterly now, we have access to the Yoni's tracker report. And so, again, if farmer is testing quarterly, then get him to share his quarterly tracker report with you. And that will, you can compare it with yours and you can say, well, hang on, yeah, he's at the same level or better than mine, therefore I'm happy to buy from that herd. That's just for Yoni's. Obviously, there are other considerations that I'm sure Sarah wants to expand on.
Yeah, I mean, the more information a farmer can have from another farmer or even vet to vet, so that, you know, you can give permission for your vet to talk to the purchaser's vet on disease risk. The more information you can get, the better that is. And like I said earlier, you know, if someone says, oh, I don't have Yoni's because they're not doing any testing, then that's a more risky herd in my mind to buy from than someone says, yes, I've got a prevalence of X, but I am doing this, this and this to control it. That's a less risky herd in my mind.
In terms of yonis and TB, you know, is there a link between the two of them? And for those people that are listening that are on a short interval TB testing, can they test for yonis?
Both diseases are mycobacterial diseases, so they're in the same family, basically, and so they're closely related. The yonis test that we use, on the whole, it's not going to sort of pick up an animal with TB. It doesn't cross-react to that level. However, we do know that if we use a TB test, we have two injections when we do a TB test, and one's an avian injection, and that avian injection is more likely to cross-react with the yonis milk test. And so we tend to advise a period of 42 days or more between TB testing and doing a milk test for yonis disease. If the farm ends up in repeated 60-day testing, you will end up with a few more animals showing positive during that sort of period of intensive TB testing. What most farmers would do, they would red tag them, identify them as potential infected risky cows. They may not necessarily cull them until obviously they're out of that control program for TB. And they would manage them as a high-risk animal.
I mean, on the counter to that, putting my kind of last few years doing the TB advisory service, is that actually if you've got animals, a high prevalence of yonis in your herd, and you are doing TB testing, there's lots of different thoughts, but the yonis could elevate the avian response within the TB test, and farmers worry that actually you're going to get more positive TB test reactors, and actually it might be that we're missing some of the TB test reactors. So equally, just like sort of having a good look at your yonis results, if you're TB testing and yonis testing at a similar time, actually also looking at your TB test results and thinking, well, that cow only just scraped through, actually should I be worrying that that animal is infected with TB, so I manage that differently and out of my herd. And again, that's something you need to sit down and talk to your vet about, what the two results mean side by side when you are looking at them.
We've mentioned the yonis disease tracker report, the information that gives us from those herds that are testing. Can we glean any information on a national level, what's happening in terms of those herds that are testing and proactively doing something to manage it?
Yeah, it's a really encouraging story, James. We've done two bits of work which are now in press. They're about to be published. But in broad terms, from looking at the results of nearly 3,000 herds over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, and then looking at a really detailed group we've been studying since 2010, we can see in the last sort of 4 or 5 years, almost like a halving of the incidence of yonis disease in both those groups. So it's just fantastic to see how rapidly the actual national herd is getting on top of yonis disease. So it's a fantastic success story.
Do we have any information that we can compare ourselves with other countries?
Yeah, we're in a position now, I think, where our prevalence is, hovering around sort of 2 to 3% now. That's the sort of level we're at. We were running at 6%. There's not many countries that end up with a test prevalence between sort of 1 and 5%. And there was a large study that was undertaken in 2016, sort of globally, looking at the prevalence of yonis disease. And there's only a handful of countries that were down at that sort of level. So we've come from a position where in 2009 we were not in good shape. We were falling behind. Now we're very much back up with the pack now. There has been this association put forward between yonis disease and the development of Crohn's disease in man. Now, it's an association. It's not causation. We know we find more yonis bacteria in the intestines of humans with Crohn's disease, but it may not necessarily mean that that's been the cause of the patient. However, I think it's prudent for us as a nation, looking back at lots of other diseases, to adopt a precautionary principle and say, well, if that was ever to be proven, we want to have a situation where we're in good order. So that's why on a national level, and the Action Group Yonis are keen to make sure we continue the progress of yonis disease, because we want to protect the industry. On a herd level, I think you want to control it for economic reasons, for welfare reasons, for sustainability reasons. I mean, it has a huge impact on the carbon footprint. So, you know, those are compelling reasons. On an individual cow level, you know, no cow wants Yoni's disease. So let's try and keep our cows healthy.
The National Action Group on Yoni's, actionyonisuk.org. Do you want to just elaborate a little bit more on that group, resources on the website, the case studies there?
Yeah, so the Action Group Yoni's was started and in 2009. Dairy UK, which is the processor organisation, they're the one that sort of grasped it and really and set up a group of people, stakeholders, to look at it. It's an open group, and we have any of the milk processors involved invited to the meetings. We do actually have experts sitting within the management group and within the technical group that help us, and we then sort of develop the program and review it. And we've just gone through a review now in 2024. So the last one was a real significant review was in 2017. So our job really, we're not here to adopt an official control program. We just create a framework. It's a framework for control. So we've identified six possible control strategies that farmers can use. We've helped train over 1,000 vets so that they can be advisors, and we have some non-vets actually as advisors as well, to support farmers with their Yoni's control programs. And so that's the purpose of the group, really. And we will continue to provide more resources. There's plenty of testimonials and extra resources on the website. So the actionyonis.org website is a useful place to go just to get some background information on the whys and wherefores of Yoni's disease.
One of the outcomes of that group, I guess, is that Yoni's, the National Yoni's Management Plan, became a red tractor standard. And there in England, at least, we do have the animal health and welfare pathway, which is time on farm to tackle something with your farm vet. The farm, hopefully there's some money in the pot to pay for the farmer time as well as the vet time. And if you are ticking along and you think you're tackling Yoni's, but actually you want to get your teeth into it, you're not getting on top of it as quickly or as successfully as you want to, then that's an opportunity to use that pathway funding to do that.
We've had some great examples. Our individual vets have used that sort of resource for either more detailed risk assessments or, for instance, education of the whole team. You know, your plan is as strong as everybody on the team. So you don't want to have a relief milker that doesn't do the right thing at the weekends, for instance, and lets the red cows into the maternity yard. So it's so important that, you know, if you can get people together, get everybody to understand why they need to do what they need to do, then, you know, that hour spent doing that kind of set you up for the years ahead.
I can't agree more with engaging with the whole team, because sometimes some of the new recruits, some of the part-time members of staff or the younger ones feel like they get some of the rubbish jobs on farm, like cleaning the trailer out or moving the calves around the farm. And you think, and if they understand why it's really important after you've just taken some cull cows off the farm to clean the trailer before you start moving young stock around, you know, I think they'll get more engagement that actually they're doing a really important job on the farm. It isn't just because no one else wants to do that job. And I think, yeah, that can be the difference between, you know, ticking along or just and actually succeeding in controlling Yoni's.
Pete, what would be your top tips in terms of preventing the spread of Yoni's?
Once an animal tests positive, always put a red tag in its ear. Don't ever take that tag out, even if it tests negative again. So treat it as a high-risk animal. And I appreciate with the, you know, the testing regime, sometimes it can be confusing. Sometimes as animals fall back into being a J0 or a green category. But in my opinion, you should always treat an infected cow as an infected cow and manage it that way. The other top tip I have is to make sure that everybody fully understands what we're trying to achieve. And we've just talked about it. It's so, so important. You know, we've got to make sure that the person that's actually milking the cows can also clearly identify from the pit which cows are high risk animals. And so some farmers will actually milk the high risk animals later, or they may use tail tapes or leg bands or whatever, so that we don't have a situation where we, for instance, take milk from an infected cow and feed it to a healthy replacement. So, you know, in simple terms, how difficult is it to control this disease? Well, it's not that hard. We just need to find a way of segregating those high-risk animals at the time of calving. That's the really, really critical control point, and you must do that well, and you must make sure that no feces from those infected cows ends up in the what I call the green yard. So for your red yard and green yard, you don't want to be taking a scraper from your red yard through into your green yard. So think through that whole area. So, you know, if you do a decent risk assessment and do that carefully alongside your vet, they will identify all those little plans, all those little potential risk points, and, you know, make sure that they're, all those holes are plugged before you set off with a plan. Half a plan is not a plan. It's got to be a full plan. So don't do half a plan. If you do 50% of the plan, you end up with 50% of the result. So what's the point?
And Sarah, same to you. Top tips. What are your thoughts?
So I can't really top Pete's. What I would say is don't just have a plan and think that's it. You need to review it regularly, at least annually at your ed tract review, or have a herd health planning meeting and involve the whole team in that, because you will have had people that have left and new starters. There might be new science coming through, new tech, you know, new policies coming through from the National Yonies Management Plan. So don't just have a plan and think that's it for the next 20 years. Actually, you need to review it and look at your data, because actually everybody likes a pat on the back, and looking at the tracker reports and seeing the colour changes can be a really motivational thing to do. And I think, yeah, people are key to this, aren't they?
And the final question from me comes back to that. Why, you know, why are we doing this? We, you know, we've been talking about yonies for years and years and years, and, you know, probably some people might switch off to it, but it is such an important subject. Why do you think it's in everyone's interest that we continue to talk about it?
I would sort of put it the other way. I'd say, why not? What do you believe you're going to gain from not engaging in Yonis disease? And I'm struggling to answer that question.
The silence is deafening from our side as well, Pete.
Yeah, and I think, you know, anybody that has heard me talk about bovine TB, my motto is control the controllable. There are things in life you can't control, but actually, why wouldn't you control what you can to reduce those risks? And that, yeah, kind of echoes what Pete's just said. Why wouldn't you? Because the benefits and the gains for a farm business are massive. The working out the why, do I want to control this, will be different for different businesses. It might be the general health and welfare of the herd. It might be, you know, I want the environmental benefits. I want this to be part of reducing my carbon footprint. It might be because I want to use this to overhaul all my management structures on farm and engage the team. There will be different reasons for different people, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, because the end goal is still the same, that we are going to reduce yonies on farm.
And that's where we leave this conversation about yonies disease. Hopefully it's given you a few reminders about the importance of diagnosis, prevention and control of bacterial infection. But for more on yonies, go to the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk. I'm James Haig, one of AHDB's Dairy Knowledge Exchange managers, and my thanks go to Pete Orpin from the National Action Group on Yonies, our lead veterinary science expert Sarah Tomlinson, and Caroline Williams from Curtis Hume Farm. And of course, thanks to you for listening.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.